You're listening to Proof to Product, and this is episode 6. We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey everyone, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. On today's episode, I'm interviewing Katie Wilson of The Good Twin, which is a stationery company known for its playful illustrations and hand-rendered type. On today's episode, Katie and I will talk about the pros and cons of being on trend or being ahead of the trends, the importance of slow, sustainable growth, and why we should never, ever compare ourselves to other people's businesses. Hey, Katie, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hello, Katie. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's so much fun to sit down and talk with you. It's been a long time.
It's so nice to see you. It was so nice to be able to see you at Paper Camp and like now seeing you again. Such a treat.
Same for me too. Okay, you owned another business prior to The Good Twin. So tell us about your business path. How did you end up in the stationery world and eventually working on The Good Twin?
I actually started in the stationery world pretty early. When I was still in college, I worked at a larger greeting card company as an intern. And then by doing that, I got really interested in the more boutique, like at the time it was all letterpress, but the types of people who come to Trade Show Bootcamp, basically like smaller companies. And then I interned at a company called Lunalux that was in Minneapolis. And that is where I learned to print. I started letterpress printing and realized that it was not my cup of tea. Thought it was going to be, was not. But in the process, I met my friend John, and he and I began Dude and Chick, which was my first company. And we started that when I was maybe 6 months out of school.
Wow.
And it was just a casual thing. I was doing the same thing that a lot of people who go to art school do, which is I was interning. I was also doing editorial illustration. I was also working at a coffee shop. I was also working for the government as a librarian, actually.
Oh, wow.
Not a certified librarian, but I was shelving. I was doing design work for the Hennepin County Library System. And so John and I started just like moonlighting, putting together this line. And it was sort of just for fun at first. And then pretty quickly, John's about 10 years older than I am, and he had a little bit more business experience. And so he kind of had, I stepped into this framework where everything was kind of set up. It was easy to put together a DBA as Dude and Chick. And we just started designing and making stuff, and people really liked it. It filled like a very specific void in the greeting card world that I still think is there, honestly. Like having that more masculine style. Yes. Really, like, people miss that and they want
crave
that.
It. Yeah. With Kelp Designs, my stationery brand, my best sellers were my stuff was a lot of pattern based work, but the masculine stuff, you know, people loved it. And that was always my best sellers at the shows too.
Right. Well, and I mean, I think, and I'm not necessarily following this now because if you look at my work, it's just like an explosion of like pink, but, but I do think that part of the reason people appreciate that is you have a lot of, I mean, my customers are mostly women, and a lot of those women have male partners or male friends that they're buying things for. And so even if their personal aesthetic is a little bit more feminine, sometimes they're looking for something that they can give to, you know, a dude in their life that isn't going to be like, ugh, this does not seem like it's for me.
Right.
So yeah, we scratched a really particular itch with Dude and Chick, and it was wonderful. And we grew the company a little bit. But sort of in the process of doing that, I really feel like I came into my own a little bit more as an illustrator and was able to develop my own aesthetic and also learn a lot more about the industry. We started working with Crone Canary. They were our sales rep group, and I got to go to the National Stationery Show and just walk the show when our stuff was in their booth. And it was like, I got to see all of the ways that like that our company could become what I had thought was not accessible to me. Like all of those, I started to realize that like all of those companies that I really admired when I was in college, I'm totally going to date myself, but like like the Egg Press and Hello Lucky. And I was just talking with Rosanna of Iron Curtain about this the other day, like Snow and Graham. Let's see, what was the other one? Carrot and something. I don't know, a couple of brands that have just been around for a really long time and were like doing it before a lot of people were doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember realizing like I can get to that point. Like we can grow this sustainably and be like in the same peer group with those people. And that was really exciting to me. Like knowing that, you know, if I saved up enough money and made my business plan correctly, I could also be at the National Stationery Show.
Yep.
So through kind of deciding that and then honing my own aesthetic a little bit and learning a little bit more about like what I wanted and also just growing up and not being 22, you know?
Yes, there's a lot to say for that.
There is a lot to say for that. And also being able to be full-time at Dude and Chick.
Yes, 100%.
I didn't go full-time at Dude and Chick until my now husband and I moved to LA, which was in 2011. Mm-hmm. So we had almost 3 full years of working, John and I did, before we decided to make the leap and not have any other source of income. Mm-hmm. And when we did that and when I moved, it sort of started to become clear to me that like we were interested in different things. Like okay. I was more interested in, I went to art school and I really consider myself like an artist, but I've also always been very business minded and I like a plan. I like to like set out a budget and set out a schedule and be like, okay, here are the things that I want to do this year. Here's where I want to go to. And John just did, he wanted something different. Like he wanted to keep it smaller. He wanted to, his idea of maintaining like artistic integrity was different than mine because like my goal was to get bigger and be able to hire employees and that sort of thing. So eventually we decided that it would be best to just part ways. And he ended up keeping Dude and Chick because I had started working. I was so used to just, you know, having another job in my spare time.
I was going to say, you're used to juggling 3 or 4 or 5 things.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a seamless transition to just pop back into those late night sessions and start The Good Twin. And I think I mentioned this to you before, but Karina from Caron Canary was really integral in, I sort of ended up talking with her about starting Good Twin and she was so supportive and really, she offered to take a look at my line and help me decide when I was ready to go. And it was like maybe a month before the stationery show in 2014 that I had a phone call date with her and I had sent her a PDF of everything and I was like expecting a critique basically. And she was just like, I mean, I feel like this is ready to go. Like, could you have everything for the stationery show? And I was just like, oh, shoot. So
she's so supportive. Isn't she wonderful? Oh,
she is amazing. Yeah. I mean, to this day, like she's so busy and I can like text her and be like, I have a question about like price points for pins or like, I just want to like bounce ideas. Cause it like sales rep knowledge is so valuable. Like they are on the ground with people just like really getting it done.
Totally.
And I feel like that knowledge is something that you don't always get when you're at your in your house or like your studio or wherever it is that you're working.
Right.
So having her available and around to talk through stuff was really helpful. And also just having her support gave me the confidence to be like, okay, maybe I should just do this.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a really long answer to your first question.
No, I'm captivated. I'm sitting here looking at you just captivated because, you know, I've heard bits of this story before, but to hear it all together like that, it's amazing. And so you launched, okay, so take me back a little bit in terms of timing-wise. The Good Twin launched in 2014. That was the same time you came to Paper Camp, right?
I actually came to Paper Camp a little bit after that. I came to Paper Camp. I launched in – okay, wait. Let me get this timeline right. I launched in May of 2014 technically, but I was still working for Dude and Chick.
Okay.
So the way that we did that was I just kind of divorced myself from all of the artistic end of things and let John do that. I was still doing a little bit of production work, and we always used my illustrations for Dude and Chick, but he sort of stepped into like a full-time art director role, whereas before that was between the two of us.
Gotcha.
So I was still doing shipping and like basically for higher illustration with him. And then I went to Paper Camp in September of 2015, I believe.
Yep.
So no, it was
all,
just like
coming back to me.
Year and a half ago, which is kind of bananas. Like I feel like I was at such a different time in my life. And I also, I mean, just a little paper camp plug, but like offering the scholarship and giving me that opportunity, I wouldn't have been able to afford to go to paper camp. Like, no question. Not that it's prohibitively expensive. It's totally worth it. But like, at the point where I was in my business, I was still, it cost a lot of, like, I was going from, John was a printer, is a printer. And he was so talented and able to take all of that expense off of our startup costs. Yeah. When I started Good Twin, I was just like, well, cool. I need like 30 designs and someone has to print these and it's not cheap. And so I put all of my money into that and was just hustling extra on the side so that, you know, we could like eat and stuff like that.
You know,
bills. You know, general things. But yeah, so being able to have the opportunity to have the scholarship and go when I was able to go so that I could get that in before I did my first stationery show, which was last year in May of 2016. That was just like invaluable because I think that, I mean, just
thank you.
Yeah, of course.
It was such an honor to have you. And it's been so fun watching your business grow. I mean, I knew when you came to camp that you, in fact, I think we emailed about this ahead of time that like, I don't know, are you too far ahead for this? You know, because you've already had a business. But at that point, you'd wholesaled and worked with reps, but you hadn't done the show. And so I don't know. I guess it just goes to show that we're all still learning in our business at different points. And there's every day, myself included, I'm learning new things from you and everyone else. So,
well, and I also think that trade shows in general, like it's this entire like secret society of like stuff that you need to know that nobody tells you. It kind of, it feels, I mean, I don't have kids, but for my friends who do, it feels like those things about pregnancy that like nobody tells you. And then you like get in the business and you're just like, oh geez, like was anybody going to let me know that like all this weird stuff was going to happen. Like that's how the stationery show felt to me. Like I had been there, but walking through there and being like, how do you like logistically plan for all these things? How much does it cost? Like, what do you need to know? And I'm the type of person where like, I always need to make myself a game plan. So if someone can lay all these, I mean, I literally use that. I think it's behind me now. My paper camp binder is right down there. And I reference it like regularly, just being like, here's a checklist of like weird stuff that I always forget about for Javits or like booth build or whatever.
Right. No, so, as you can see from the book, I'm a big list planner, you know, strategic planner too. Like I need to know, I want to know what's coming so that I can plan and prepare for it. So I really do admire you too, because you have that artistic, wonderful artistic creative side of you, but you also have the business side of you where you're being very thoughtful in your decision-making process and you're looking at the numbers and the plan and, you know, the reason behind your decisions. And that is a tough thing for a lot of creatives in our world. Most people, you know, fall on one side or the other. So for you to be able to kind of balance both, that's amazing. So kudos to you on that.
Thanks. Yeah. It's something that I appreciate about myself, but it also made it so that like, my journey to like making illustrations that I liked took a lot longer than other people. I always like to say I really got a lot out of art school. Like I went in being like a hot mess that like thought I wanted to paint. And then I came out being a person who was like, I can like draw a cat. I mean, and other things too, but you know.
Right. No, I know what you mean. Well, let's go down the path about product now. So what does inspire you when you're designing new products?
Gosh, pretty much everything. I would say that this is such a hokey answer, but like the internet is so valuable. like I know there are a lot of pros and cons to things like social media, but I will say that Instagram in particular has made it so that, you know, I can curate basically a feed of all these different things that inspire me and like bookmark them and use those as jumping off points to like go, this is full dork mode, but like go to the library and like research things that obviously inspired other people, whether it be, you know, certain types of design or illustration, certain eras. Even moving to California was like really integral to me. Like you can see it in my work in terms of like the colors that I use and just like the whole aesthetic of Los Angeles is so all over the place and weird and fun and like plant-based. Like there were just all these things that I'd never seen before. I was in Minnesota before, so it's just like
it's a big change.
Gray wasteland. I mean, I love Minnesota. I'm just glad that I visit there now instead of living there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I keep a notebook of a pretty much everything that I'm interested in or that I think of. And for me, I try and draw a little bit every day. And so I have that side of me where like, I just have sketchbooks that have like a bunch of different cute illustration ideas or patterns that I like. And I curate that just from, you know, I'll go to, there's an art school near me that has a library that's open to the public. And I worked at my art school's library all 4 years. So I still go there and just like sit in there for a few hours and just like look through books and draw. And then I can kind of come back with those. And between that and then this running list that I have of like puns that I think are funny, I sort of try and marry those two things so that I end up with like solid designs. And then I don't know if, I mean, like I started in the greeting card world and I do think that will always be my bread and butter. Like that's mm-hmm. something that I really enjoy. The margins are really good. And I appreciate being able to use lots of different colors and experiment with print processes and all that sort of thing. But moving towards like enamel pins was a way for me to take design ideas that I had that maybe weren't, not that they weren't strong enough to make a card, but you know, making a greeting card has all of those different aspects to it. Like mm-hmm. you need to have, you probably need to have copy on it. It needs to be occasion specific or like for a specific type of person. And when I started to make pins, it was like, oh, I just have this drawing that I really like of like an eyeball or like a plant, and I can make that into like a tangible thing that people also want to buy.
Right.
And it sort of scratches the itch that I have to make things that I like wear and use in addition to just paper products.
That's awesome. I so you were one of the very first to come out with enamel pins, which kudos to you, because now a lot of people are popping up and there's some really fun stuff coming on the market. But how has that been for you, seeing something that you worked hard to create and come up with now becoming, I don't want to say saturated because yeah. that has a negative connotation.
But it is. It's like, I feel like I went from, I think you and I have talked about this before, like, again, Karina, this entire podcast is just me being like, everyone, tap Karina Murray. But going from talking with Karina about it, and I actually want to point out that I was one of the first people like on that trend train. But I definitely, I mean, Beth from Greenwich Letterpress has been making enamel pins and selling them. Like, it's not like they were a dead product for her. She's been selling them for like 10 years or something. Yeah. And so somebody like that who's been doing it forever, like, she's got my problem times a million, because I saw it go from something where like Karina was very supportive. But I remember when we were talking about it, she was kind of like, well, like Greenwich is like in that market. Like you don't want to seem like you're stepping on her toes. And I know Beth mm-hmm. and not well, but I know her as a buyer. And so I didn't want to seem like I was ripping her off. Right. But I knew that I had a unique point of view, and like she has such a specific illustration style and she was filling such a specific part of that market. And my first pin set was the Zodiac pin set. Yep. I hadn't seen anything like that. And I was really excited about it. But I will say that like I try and remind myself on like a daily basis that like a rising tide like really does bring up all ships. Because listen, you think it's fun to be on the front end of a trend and be like the cool kid? It's not. Because I dropped a ton of money on something that people were like, enamel pins, huh? What do you do with these? And I was like, I swear, the Tumblr girls on the internet are going wild for them.
Right.
And that really was what was able to boost that business enough that I kept with it. Mm-hmm. Because I've always had an online store, and I, you know, I sell greeting cards on them, but it wasn't until I started making pins that I really saw a lot of traffic there. And that, with like that better margin and everything, really was able to float me for long enough that I was like, okay, I'm going to stay in this. I feel like this trend has legs. And it turns out, like, now I think I was telling you, I just checked the other day, and my business is like, it's fully 45% pin sales at this point, which on one hand is terrifying because I do think that it is a trend that will eventually kind of die out. But on the other hand, it's really exciting because it's been a product that has gotten me exposure and into mm-hmm. a lot of stores that like never carried cards before. And now they carry cards as well because right. they saw that part of my catalog.
I want to touch on one thing you said about being on the front end of a trend. And obviously at that time, you can't really tell, like, this is going to be a trend. I mean,
way to know. Yeah.
Everything's a risk, right? When you're creating, when you're moving into a new product category. But what you talk about, what you mentioned is at the front end, you have that whole education portion of selling your products, of telling people how to use them and why they're important and why they should buy. Whereas now, you know, people understand what they are and how to use them. And so, like you said, there's pros and cons to.
Well, and you're like, you're blazing a trail for everyone who came after. Like, I mean, and again, I have been this person to many other trends. So, and even just, I mean, there's trends within everything, right? Yes. Like, you're never going to be the first person to do anything. But doing all that work to, like you said, educate the consumer and also figure things out, like, when I initially did my pins, they were on these larger postcards that were 4x6. And I, for me, that was my way of being like, this is something special that sets me apart from other people who have been doing enamel pins for a long time. And this will be like my special thing. And I was like, what could be better? A card with a pin. And nobody got it because they had two hurdles to get over. It was like, first they had to know what the pin was, and then they had to be able to like recognize the pin on the product instead of their customer just picking up a card and being like, why does this cost $12 when all of these other cards cost $5?
Right.
But now I'm glad I pursued that as well, because that was something that was really easy for me, really fun for me to design and really easy for me to add because it wasn't a super expensive part of the product. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of extra work for me, but it was something that I felt like I got a lot out of. Like, I'm proud of all of those designs that I've done. They're the
you
ones
should
that
be.
I,
they're gorgeous.
Yeah, and I love them.
I will say too, you know, one of the hurdles you had to encounter by breaking into that category too, is that you needed to, it's not like a printer where you have a Rolodex of people that, does anyone use a Rolodex anymore?
But I feel you.
You know what I mean? But like, it's like you have a list of printers that you know you can go to for different types of print, the print capacity. But when you're creating a brand new product like that, where it's not necessarily a trend yet, you also have that hurdle of finding manufacturers that can do a good job, can do it within your margins, can, you know, turn it around in the time you need. But so, for you particularly, when you were going into the pins, let's say, just since we're on that right now, like, and you're unsure how it's going to sell, how do you determine how much to order, what volume to order?
I have a very scientific method that involves the amount of money that I know I have and that I'm willing to risk. I mean, it's like doing Vegas correctly. You know what I mean? Like, you go in there and you're like, I'm willing to lose $100. So that's all I'm going to spend. That's how I felt. I did have faith in the products that I created, but I knew that I could afford to basically gamble with a certain amount. And I set my margins based on assuming that they weren't going to do particularly well, that it was going to take a little while for them to get legs. And that's not because I wasn't confident in my product. That was because I knew that there weren't a lot of other things out there. And I know firsthand how long it takes for a trend to get like from the internet to like my boutique stores, even much less my bigger accounts.
Right.
So that process can take a really long time. And in the meantime, like, you're sitting on all this product. So what I did was I literally Googled enamel pins, and I researched maybe 10 different companies, sent them all requests for quotes. And my thing was, since I was doing the Zodiac ones, I knew I was going to be doing 12 different styles to begin with. And enamel pins are a lot like printing letterpress greeting cards, where like the more you do, the cheaper they get. So my challenge was to find a place that I could negotiate with a little bit and say, hey, I'm doing 12 designs instead of just one. Can I get you to do 100 of each at the price of what you would normally charge for 500 of each, because I'm doing so many different ones? And I mean, you never know unless you ask, right? I actually had most of the people that I requested that information from and tried to negotiate with, most of them came back to me with being like, oh yeah, we can probably work with you on this. Like, it's going to be a pretty big order. So for my first run, I just did 100 of each pin, which was a lot. And for those particular styles, the Zodiac pins actually didn't end up being good sellers. Like, I still sell a lot of them through my online store, but Zodiac signs are such a fun thing, but like, there's 12 of them. So it's a huge buy-in for a little boutique to get like across the entire line. So I'm really thankful that they did well enough through my website that I was like, oh, maybe I'll make some like everyday pin. And that was when I did the like Best Babes pin and the eyeball pin and the LA pin. And those have been some of my best sellers like to this day. Yeah. So from there, I still only order 200 or 300. And I'm realizing now that, you know, if I can afford to invest a little bit more upfront, it makes a lot more sense because I am selling through them very, very quickly. And it doesn't make sense to have to reorder them after a month. But
no, but at the same time, it is scary to lay out that cash outlay at the beginning for something that you're not sure if it's going to sell. Particularly, I mean, by now you have a little bit of history under your belt of what your sales are and what's working and what's not. But when you're entering into a brand new category, it does get a little overwhelming for people to, you know, you don't want to buy 50,000 of something.
Exactly.
You know?
And then you're just sitting on them forever. And I will say that like my philosophy with this stuff is, if you can't make your margins work on not a very small amount, but a reasonably small amount, you probably shouldn't be making the product. Like, you just aren't ready yet. For me, that was my thing. I was like, I need to be able to order these in relatively small quantities and still not be losing money on them because I couldn't afford to do that. And now, you know, my margins are just getting better as I'm able to place bigger and bigger orders. And I have a really good relationship with my pin guy.
Yeah.
Which is important. I mean, I think building and keeping those relationships strong is nice because now if I want to test something out that I think is completely insane, I can still do a run of 100 and he'll give me the same pricing as my run of 500.
Nice. Well done. That's a great concrete benefit of showing how relationships can
definitely
can help. So you have also manufactured some of your products overseas. Can you talk about the pros and cons to that?
Yeah. My pins are manufactured overseas. And I initially, all the rest of my products are made in the U.S., and that's something that is important to me. But I also have been trying to be realistic about what my consumer wants and what I want. And I wanted to be able to make pins, and the market wasn't – I mean, mine are already on the expensive side of things. And I work with a company called Pinnacle Pins, and they are based in North Carolina. The guy I work with, Doug, works in North Carolina. They have like a whole stable of people that are paid in the U.S., which is wonderful. But then they have a factory that they've been working with in China for like 20 years. So Doug acts as my liaison between myself and the guy who owns the factory, which is nice because Doug speaks fluent Chinese. I do not speak fluent Chinese. Doug is willing to work super weird hours. I am not willing to work super weird hours.
Right.
So, and that means that the pricing is a little bit higher, but it's still something that I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, because you're getting a service out of it. Like, he's saving you time and
totally.
And also mistakes. I mean, I always think about how many mistakes I made at the beginning, just printing things wrong or setting up my files wrong and things like that. And so having somebody that's done this in between can really help save
for
you
sure.
time and effort.
And he's also really valuable because, you know, I know him pretty well at this point, and he takes the time to know like my brand aesthetic. And so if a color doesn't look the way that I want it to look, like, his guy in China will say something to him about it, and he'll call me before they go ahead with the order.
Right.
So it was great. But to be honest, when I started, I was looking for pin companies that were in the US. That's how I found Pinnacle. But, you know, when I did a little bit of digging, I realized that the manufacturing was overseas. So for me, that was a low risk way for me to get my products at a price that I was a little bit more comfortable with. But, you know, with a minimal, from what I've heard from other people, oftentimes when you do overseas manufacturing, pricing is really good, but the minimums can be kind of insane. There's a lot of back and forth and just a lot more risk that I wasn't comfortable with.
Yeah. No, it sounds like this is a nice hybrid for you.
Yeah.
I know too, that a lot of people struggle with the manufacturing overseas, from a core values perspective.
For
I don't
sure.
mean to get all hokey, but like, you know, we have some alums, for example, like Meg from Bell and Union, and she's very much American made, and that's her brand. And she's branched out into a lot of things where she's actually had to then create manufacturing systems to create her products. And that's a huge undertaking, but that's one of her core values. And it's something that's very important to her. So it sounds to me like you're okay. Like, you also see the business side of things of like, I want to create this product, and how am I going to do it in a way that makes sense financially, but also streamlines the process.
And exactly. And I try and, I mean, I guess I live my entire life like this. Like, you do what you can. For me, like, I've made it a priority to keep all of my like stationery printing, like the backing cards that I use on the pins are like beautifully printed, and they're made by a family owned company that's in LA. All of my cards are printed by DeFrance Printing in San Diego, and then Mama Sauce, which is in Florida.
Yep.
And that's been important to me. But for this particular thing, like my desire to get into this market, like, and I appreciate when people want only American-made products in their stores. I am all for that. Like, just order my cards. I get it. My pins are not for you. But also, I gotta say, like, it sort of rubs me the wrong way when I have buyers that come back at me about issues with pricing, and then they're like, well, why aren't they made in the U.S.? And I'm like, if you want, like, for me, the research that I did, if I was going to make this particular product in the U.S., my pins would have to retail for $15. And I don't think you want that.
Right.
So you kind of have to balance that.
Well, and two, there should be no shame around any of it.
Exactly. That was the other thing I was going to say. Being upfront with buyers about it, not trying to hide the fact that, like, I do get those manufactured in China. Mm-hmm. That's how I got my price point to where I wanted it at. If you don't like that, I totally understand. But this particular product of mine is not for you. And just, you know, being upfront and getting out in front of that sort of issue with
and
people.
Being confident without feeling, you know, just like you said, being open in lines of communication, being upfront about things. And if somebody else feels strongly about it, then they'll just choose not to buy it. That's okay too.
Exactly.
But ultimately, you're making the best decisions you can make for your business. And this is a product category that you want to go into, and it makes perfect sense for you.
Well, I also think that, that kind of dovetails nicely into some other questions about things that I have kind of had to face as I've gotten bigger with, you know, like selling to a bigger company. Like, I sell to Urban Outfitters, and that was, I mean, I don't mean to sound like super hippy-dippy or anything, but that was a big step for me. I was excited about the order, but also, like, the foundation of my business is and always will be those smaller stores that are placing like $100 to $500 orders, you know? And I didn't want, I tried to be careful with selling to Urban and not giving them too deep of a discount, making sure that they're, I mean, the cards that I sell at Urban are priced higher than most of the cards that I sell at boutiques because they need to get their margins where they want them. And just for me, becoming okay with the fact that, like, you know, I decided I wanted to grow my business to a certain point. And honestly, that means being open to partnerships and selling to larger companies. And that's something that I had to decide was okay with me. And that's also something that, like, wasn't necessarily on the table with my previous company. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to be on my own, to be able to make those decisions and be confident about them. And yeah, just balance my values as a person and as a businesswoman with being able to succeed in the way that I want to.
I think that's a really important message for everyone that's listening to hear, that ultimately you need to make the decisions that are best for your company, best for you as a person, and, you know, are going to really tie back into your overarching goals of what you want this business to be. I cringe when I hear people feeling uncomfortable. I totally understand what you're saying about, like, that jump to work with Urban may have felt like a little bit, but you hear people are like, oh, they sold out to a big brand, or, you know, oh, they give a huge discount, or they're not taking care of their independent retailers. And I want people to understand that everybody's business is unique and their decision-making process is different. Their circumstances are different. So there should be no shame around the decisions that people are making.
Oh my God, definitely. And you also have to think about the back end of that, right? Yes. Like, Urban carries two of my cards. I would love them to carry more of my cards. But at any given time, if I was doing blockbuster business with them, they'd be carrying maybe five or six. Right. That money that I get from a relationship with them has allowed me to expand my line so that I have, you know, 200 cards for all my independent retailers. And I wouldn't, I mean, Paper Source is another good example that's a more sustaining business for me. Like, being able to have those bigger paychecks mixed in with all of the other small stores makes it so that I can expand my line, makes it so that I can hire someone to help me, and so that I am not overwhelmed and underfunded.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a delicate balance, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, making sure that you're staying true to your own aesthetic and what you want to be doing with your stuff, but also supporting that. Because, like, I don't have any other way that I'm making money. It's not like I have some, like, vault in the back that I'm just like, well, I can do whatever I want, you know?
Wait. You don't have a vault of money in the back?
I've been looking for it. I've been wanting to Scrooge McDuck my entire life. I mean, if I could dive into a pile of gold coins every morning, I feel like my skin would be a lot better, you know?
My skin would be better and I'd start my day in a lot better way.
Yeah, exactly. But alas, there is
but
no
here we
such
are.
Thing.
No vault.
I've just made, you know, a vault of pugs for myself to like
there
bathe
you go.
In. Keeps me young.
Awesome. All right. So what piece of advice would you give to newcomers that want to create a product-based business? It doesn't have to necessarily be stationery world, but people that want to have a product out in the world and sell it.
I would say the two things that I would remember are things that we've talked a lot about, just sustainable, slow growth and like shine theory, basically, which is that thing where like, if you shine, I shine. Like appreciating all of the other people who are your peers in business and relying on them for moral support, but also like sharing information and being part of a community. Like that's something that's so valuable. And remembering that, you know, everybody you see that's doing all the things that you want to do, they've gotten there because they have the support of people like you. You'll get there. Maybe you won't get there. Maybe your type of business is like something else. But remembering that like people succeeding in a similar field to you is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So remembering that and also just not comparing yourself to other people. Having slow, sustainable growth is so essential. Not overextending yourself in terms of budget, not overextending yourself in terms of how much work that you can do, we talked about this at Paper Camp, not quitting your day job before you're ready for it. You know, you need to, you don't need to be overworked, but like you need to make sure you can get food on the table, take care of like your kids or your dogs or yourself.
Yeah.
Making that time and not rushing things, like knowing that these things can take a while. I mean, I worked for so long without having, you know, a base on my business that I could be full time. And that's okay. Because I feel like taking the time to do that meant that I was more careful about how I spent my money. I put my money and my energy into products that I cared about. And I truly believe that making things that I like has been beneficial to my business. Staying true. This is like the artsy farts part of me. Staying true to like things that I like, being proud of every single thing that's in my line and standing behind it. I'm not making my work. I mean, I am making my work for other people. That's one of the things that I like is that it's an affordable way for people to buy art. But it's also stuff that I'm proud of and that, you know, I'm excited about. And
that's a huge component.
Totally. And it also helps when you're like working a lot of extra hours and on very little sleep and just trying to be like, why am I doing this? Like, it's because it's for you, because you don't have to answer to anybody else. And that's valuable, at least to me.
It is. It's absolutely valuable. But I love what you said too about slow, sustainable growth, because as you know, I preach this all the time. Like, there's no such thing as an overnight success, even if you see, or if you see people online that seem to be an overnight success. And so I think reminding people to keep plugging away, setting their goals, you know, working towards those things, it's okay. That's how it should be. And that's how you're going to build a sustainable business. If you try to rush into it and make decisions on the fly, you know, they may not be the best decisions. So
yeah, exactly. And I also think that remembering, I mean, there's always going to be people that are examples of overnight successes, but most of the people that you see that you think are like, oh, they've got it all figured out, they've been working behind the scenes for years and years and years, whether it's within their specific business or just being a freelance illustrator or going to school or even just raising a family, you know, like all those things take a lot of time and energy. There aren't any shortcuts. Maybe somebody like lucks into one, but I haven't yet. So
the large majority of people don't luck into one.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, not everybody can have the vault.
But if we find it, we gotta tell each other about that.
yeah, exactly. Let me know.
I will, for sure. All right. So what is next for The Good Twin? What do you have coming up?
Well, I'm actually really excited about my stationery show release. So I'm going to be exhibiting at the stationery show in just a couple of weeks. Everything's fine. but actually, in reality, like this year is a lot more smooth sailing for me, like knock on wood, just because my crate's already out there and my booth is already built. I was really able to focus and put my funding into new product this year.
Nice.
So I've been doing screen printing, and in this release, I did screen printing on colored paper, which looks so cool. I'm so excited about it. And I have some new pins and new pencil sets that I'm really excited about. I started, pencils are another example. I dipped my toe in that last year, and they really had like a slow beginning, and now they're really ramping up and people are really excited about them. So I've been enjoying doing that. That's what's coming up. I'm in the process right now, the very not fun and work intensive process of researching new products and coming up against hurdles. Like, I was really excited about certain things that I thought I had coming down the pipeline, and then I got my pricing back and I was like, oh.
Yes, I will wait on that one.
Exactly. So I was hoping, I've been trying to make keychains forever, and I was hoping to have those come out at NSS because I was like, enamel pins, keychains, like that seems like something that would come through.
Yeah.
And man, there were just a lot of variables, particularly with price, that I was not prepared for. Okay. So those are being put on the back burner. But yeah, I have NSS in May, and I have, I'm doing pool trade show again in August. I did it in February and it was really successful. So I'm doing that again. And I just hired my second employee.
Yay!
She started 2 weeks ago. It's so exciting. So I'm trying to, basically, I feel like I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off all the time right now, because the process of learning how to delegate things is more work than, you know what I mean?
Like, but yes, I totally know what you mean. In fact, I have a free class about it, about how I need to look into it. I'll send you the link, but it's on, for anyone interested, if you go to online courses on tradeshowcamp.com, there's a free class. It's called Deciding What to Delegate. You can watch it straight away. It's like an hour long video. But Katie, what I was going to tell you is, I know that feeling of like, oh, why am I going to spend 30 minutes showing her how to do this when I can do it in 5? But add up those 5 minutes, over time, and she's going to save you tons of time. So
I know. Do you know how I decided this? I have like multiple spreadsheets because, again, like well-documented nerd. So I have all these spreadsheets with my profit margins. And one of the things that I wasn't accounting for was labor, because I was doing everything myself.
Yeah.
And when I sat down and calculated like even the meager amount that I wanted to pay myself, and I added that in, I realized that I could pay someone like a good wage that was above, well above minimum wage, to come and help me. And it would actually cost me less money if you take into account like the design time that I should be doing. So that was my first employee, Brian, like really helped me understand that, because now he's doing all of my shipping. And it took a while to train him in, and it took a lot to let go of like touching every single thing that went out the door. But now that he's doing all that, we're able to handle so much more volume, and just like my release for NSS is so much stronger and like bigger because
you were focused on the higher,
higher
level stuff, the revenue generating stuff.
Exactly. And the things that I'm good at too. I mean, Brian is a very special guy, but like anyone can ship an order. Anyone can be trained to like sleeve a card. Like I don't need to be taking my time to do that at this point. So.
Well, congratulations. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'm excited about the future.
Good. Well, and I'm excited to see all your stuff in New York in a couple of weeks.
I can't wait to see you in person. It's so funny because we live near-ish to each other, but as we all know, in LA standards, you might as well be on the other side of the world.
I know. I'm guilty of not getting out of my bubble too much either, which is not a good thing.
So. It's hard. We all work a lot, but being able to like connect with each other, even like this, is nice.
It is. So thank you so much. Where can people find you online?
I am on Instagram at The Good Twin Co. And you can also see all of my work on my website, which is thegoodtwin.co. No M.
No M.
That needs to be like beyond my business card.
you sound like me. Trade show camp, no boot.
Yeah, exactly. Like all of our handles are trade show camp. You can also Google The Good Twin and I come up, except there is one episode of Sarah Michelle Gellar's show, The Ringer, called The Good Twin. So you might get that too. I've recently eclipsed her in the Google search results. Proud of myself.
It's nicely done. You'll have to put that in your metadata or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Katie, thank you again for your time today. This was an amazing conversation and so much fun.
Thank you so much for having me, Katie. I think I speak for everybody in this community where like I appreciate you and everything you do, and you've been so valuable to my business. So I don't know what I'd do without being able to ask you for advice.
Oh, I have goosebumps. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.